Baker Mayfield, undraftable, off my board.
The Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield.
Welcome into the OBR Film Breakdown. I'm your host, Jake Burns. This is your weekend bonus content edition. We have some things that have popped up lately since just our last post of our Chalk Talk yesterday. And that is Anthony Schwartz and first-round pick Greg Newsom have signed, which is great. The Browns go into camp with everybody squared away from their rookie list. Most teams will. Usually the conversation is built around guaranteed dollars up front and usually to the offset language, meaning if the Browns were to cut said player, another team who picked that player up would offset the money the Cleveland Browns owed said cut player, rookie, young player on a rookie deal. But usually the goal is to have offset language in there that allows rookies, as a worst case scenario, that they get cut and picked up by somebody else, they can then, you know, profit from two places, Cleveland finishing out their guaranteed money and the other place new contract. So I think that's how I've always understood it. Someone wants to yell at me about that, feel free. I'm not a cap guru, but that's what I've come to understand. But it looks like the Browns are good to go. All of those are signed. The 75th anniversary uniforms are out. Our Brad Stainbrook did a fantastic job illustrating those uniforms to you through our Rumor Central section for weeks, dating back to the beginning of July, putting out what he thought the helmet was going to look like, what he's heard, some connections there. Had some photos early last night. We had everything ready to go. Put up the story right when it hit the app. And I hope you guys like them. They're cool. I like the numbers on the helmet. I mean, you know, as cool as Browns uniforms can get, which are pretty simplistic in nature, clean, all of that. And I liked them. And it was weird. You know, it's unfortunate this announcement had been made forever. So it's not like the Browns were trying to, you know, upstage the Cleveland Indians dropping everything. I don't know if the Indians felt rushed. There's maybe people with more connections here to the new Guardians name change. Again, if you don't like it, you just got to accept it. It's not going anywhere, so you might as well embrace it. Everything, all teams with names that date back decades and decades and decades, it's always going to be really challenging to reset the name, and not everybody's going to love it. You know, not everyone's going to love it because they've grown their whole lives knowing their team is. Imagine trying to change the Yankees name. It's just like people are always going to hate that. That's the same with the Indians, because the Indians matter to you guys as much as the Yankees matter to their fan base, and nobody's going to like what the Yankees have changed their name to. I think there are plenty of people that do like the name change to the Guardians. It's some people that hate it, fine, whatever. The logos are up for debate, but they're what they selected, so you might as well embrace it, because complaining will get you literally nowhere on this matter. Same with the Browns' new uniforms. They're always going to keep it pretty simple. I think they did some nice tweaks with the single stripe and the numbers on the side, and I thought they came out looking really clean, so I hope you guys enjoyed them too. And they'll be really cool to see them wear this year, and they can get even more crazy in the coming years when they can add in a truly alternate helmet with an alternate color, should they choose to do so. So that could be fun down the line. But for now, we get these 75th uniforms, and I think they're really cool, and I think they'll have a lot of fun stuff prepared to celebrate the 75th anniversary of the franchise, which is neat. So let's talk about our interview today. We have John Kosko on. He does great work with Pro Football Focus. He's one of the lead behind-the-scenes guys with quarterback charting data, so many different things, and I always enjoy talking to John because he watches the Browns games closely several times, grades them, charts them, all that stuff, and he has a really good feel for what the outcome of the game was, why things happened. So I always try to get him on when we can. He's had a busy offseason here, and but that's okay. You know, we can chat with him now and try to chat with him weekly during the season too for some insights. So he's going to share some guys he's excited about, maybe some guys he has some apprehension about with this team, what the data can tell us based on last year, kind of heading into this year. Really fun conversation. So let's get over to that conversation right now. John, it's been too long, man. It's been too long. We got to catch up more often. We got to get this thing going into the season. Pro Football Focus is so important. You guys have ingrained yourself into every single conversation around football. That's an impressive feat, my friend.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I'm just a part of it. And, you know, obviously a lot of good work has been done by our owner, Neil owner is Chris Collinsworth, but founder Neil Hornsby to get this whole thing started, and Chris Collinsworth taken to a next level and in terms of his ownership. And yeah, it's really something that we are able to, we were able to take this thing to the next level essentially, and with our college product now and moving into other avenues with sports and stuff like that. But football is the main thing, so it's pretty fun to be known and, you know, be a part of this company.
It's impressive. It is truly so hard to put yourself in a normal conversation, to put data, to put numbers into football in a normal conversation. I think some people have opinions on it one way or the other. I think if you can't see the value of it, that's on you. But like, to me, to be able to take data, put it into numbers, and make it a part of everyday conversation folks have is impressive. I would wonder, where does it end for you guys? Do you guys think like you could ever creep into the high school level and work on an even bigger, broader scale, or does it go to other sports like you just said?
So it is a we do have some high school data and stuff that we've dabbled in. It's a matter of being able to have the budget to be able to do it, you know, getting paid to be able to do that type of stuff. But sure. I think eventually that's going to get there where we are doing, you know, some of the heavy hitters in high school. But as you know, there's thousands of high schools across the nation, and essentially it's going to be probably done on does this agency, you know, recruiting agency need this type of data? How are they going to get us the tape, and how are they going to pay us? Or is it going to be college specific? I don't know all those answers and stuff like that. I know we're going to be delving more into the FCS competition on college side this year. We did do that this spring when they had their spring ball, and, you know, teams are really, really liking that. So we'll do that for them. But, we're branching out into other sports. So Gordon McGinnis, he's one of our former senior analysts for football. He's now on the soccer side of the things for PFF. So there's PFF soccer. And we're developing that product, and there's going to be a couple other sports that are coming down the road that are in the works. But there's a lot of exciting things for sports fans in general. It won't be just football anymore.
It's expanding.
I'm not going to do anything at all when it comes to soccer or the other sports. I'm still all just strictly football.
Just Ted Lasso it. You could be the Ted Lasso of grades and just wing it. Just wing it the whole time. Maybe it'll work out.
Right, exactly. That bicycle kick looks awesome. Yeah,
give that thing a perfect mark. Listen, let's talk Browns, though. That's why we're here. That's why everyone's listening. I think there's a lot of interesting data on these guys from last year and some people they brought in. So I'm curious to sort of select a few. Baker obviously stands out. He finished last year with an 85.7 total offensive grade. His pass metric was 85.1. Where are you going into this year? Are you team? And I just ask, I know I've asked a ton of people this conversation point. I know you've probably been asked yourself 100 times, but I guess maybe I'll cap off for the last time you get asked this offseason. Do you think that they should stay patient with him? And if they stay in regardless of the conversation of how he gets paid, how did you leave last year feeling about him?
I mean, I left last season feeling great about Baker Mayfield and where his game was at. So you look at overall, he was a top 10 graded quarterback, but you look at once you essentially figured out the offense, things started clicking for this offense as they all got on the same page. He was the second highest graded quarterback in the NFL from week 7 onward through the playoffs. He was only behind the MVP and Aaron Rodgers, who was, you know, phenomenal. Last year, as we all know, Aaron Rodgers had a 93.2 grade from week 7 on. Baker Mayfield was a 91.8, ahead of Tom Brady, ahead of Deshaun Watson, who was excellent, Patrick Mahomes, all those guys. You know, that's where his level of play was at last year, basically post week 6. So my feeling on, you know, it wasn't all noise too, right? So one of the things that we look at, multiple things we look at, but, you know, we have these stable metrics and these unstable metrics, and these are basically, hey, based on our data that we have, what is more translatable year to year versus what's not. So a lot of people look at quarterback play and they see, oh, but this guy can't perform under pressure, it means he's really bad. And generally you want to be able to perform under pressure, that because that does happen, but it only happens on average about 30% of the time when you're dropping back. So generally play under pressure is noise. So what you do in a clean pocket is what is more important, because you're more likely to be in a clean pocket. Baker Mayfield for the whole season was 5th overall in passing grade from a clean pocket. From that week 7 onward point, he was top 2. And he was top two in a lot of these stable metrics that we have. Standard dropback, which means there was no play action to help him out. He was just dropping back and firing it. For early downs, so first and second downs, those are, you know, those you had a lot more dropbacks there, and there's more control of what the quarterback can do rather than on third downs. He was a top graded quarterback in the NFL as well. No play action, another top graded quarterback. So he's in these stable metrics. He was one of the best quarterbacks in the NFL last year, and especially from week 7 onwards, he was easily a top 3 quarterback in many of these metrics. So that's where I'm at with Baker Mayfield. Whatever they do with his contract, you know, I'm on the boat where, like, it doesn't matter if they're patient with it or if they do it this year. I think from a business standpoint, you want to make sure that this is your guy, right? So was this a 12-game sample size that was kind of a fluke and he's more of like you're an average type of quarterback, which is what you got with Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. They, you know, those teams that paid him a lot of money, they then traded them 2 seasons later. So you don't want to be that type of team where you thought you had your guy, but you know, you're only going off of 1 season's worth of data. And while we have a lot of data that suggests that Baker Mayfield is going to be that guy, you know, the franchise quarterback for the Cleveland Browns moving forward, I completely understand them being hesitant to give him that extension this offseason and then waiting until next offseason.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Yeah, I would say the thing that I'm most happy about, John, is we've had conversations that, you know, text threads and going back and forth, and we were really worried, man. I know that back and forth between you and I, it's like weeks 1 through 5 were like, this is kind of making me uneasy.
He was a bottom 3 quarterback through the first 6 weeks of the season, and it was capped off by 2 atrocious performances against the Colts and the Steelers in week 5 and 6. And the first half against the Colts was not bad, but it really kind of started falling off the rails in that second half, and it was really bad against the Steelers in week 6. And then everything turned around for him. So, yeah, I mean, there was a lot to be concerned about. It was not as if it was, you know, the flukiness of those first 6 games where, like, the stable metrics were all showing really bad for him. He turned it around, so.
Well, that's like you brought 2019 into 2020, started out the way he did, and I just remember saying to you and you to me, like, this can't be it. Like, whatever this is can't work, first of all. And if he doesn't figure it out, then they're going to have some hard discussions coming. Well, he did figure it out. So kudos to him. He did figure it out. Now can he put it together for a full season? I'm sure that's what they're waiting for. If he does that, he'll get paid handsomely, and it doesn't matter because we'll all be happy with it. He throws 35 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, 4,000 yards. Probably not going to be many people complaining that they had to give him 2 or 3 extra million every year, you know, because you got your quarterback. You figured it out. So let's talk other players. I'll ask it both ways, offense and defense. So we'll start offense. The offensive line is, well, the thing that's big about the offense, and you know this, is everybody comes back. And that's a rare thing to have all 11 players return to your offense year over year. It's rare. It's important because offensive metrics are more stable. You guys have been very vocal about that. Year to year offensive metrics are more stable, more predictable. So I guess what I'm asking you, is there anybody... So there's 2 parts to this. Is there anybody who maybe didn't perform well last year who you think is ready to take a leap? And then on the other side of that, like, is there somebody you could see really being a weak link that causes them to have some issues this year? Should have maybe prepared you for that one a little better, but I think it's okay to kind of go off the riff here and look at the numbers and tell me what you've sort of brainstormed throughout the offseason.
Yeah, I think I want to see improvement from the first round pick from last year, Jedrick Wills. And we liked him coming out, and he was a good player, right? But last year, he played well in the first half of the season, and as a lot of rookies, you know, happens for them, they hit a wall and they start, you know, playing a little bit worse as the season goes along. Maybe, you know, because they're used to the rigors of a 16 game season, and ended up obviously being an 18 game season for the Cleveland Browns. But I think Jedrick Wills, his overall grade last year is 62.6. He was solid as a pass protector, as a 77.6. But his run blocking grade, which is kind of a surprise for me that he was this low, but it was at a 52.8. So obviously, I think if you can maintain that pass protection grade, 77.6, you can absolutely win games with. We saw that last year. They did. But run blocking, with this team being such a run-heavy team, you can't expect everybody on that offensive line to perform as well as they did in the run blocking game again this year. So it's one of the main guys in that regard being Wyatt Teller. Wyatt Teller's run blocking grade was a 93.6, one of the highest grades we've ever seen from a guard in the course of a season, in the PFF era. So because of that, I'm expecting him to actually regress from that level to, even if it's in the mid 80s, that's a big difference in terms of what you're getting from Wyatt Teller this year compared to last year. So if you're getting that, but then you get a raise in Chedrick Wills' grade in a run game, maybe he fills out his frame. He's less chubby and more muscular or whatever, and just putting on muscle, and he's able to withstand the rigors of a full season. That might have be a wash in terms of what the effectiveness on that offensive line. So I think Jedrick Wills would be the guy that I'm expecting to perform better, especially as your first pick in the draft last year at number 10 overall. What was the other half of your question? You're asking guys
just kind of maybe who could be a weak link, who takes a step back that gives you some concern about if the Browns come out this year, they're not as productive as we thought they were on offense. Why do you think that might happen? Is there a player or two that would be responsible for that?
I would say that if they, and it's not a guy that like played well last year, but I'm going to say it's OBJ. Like, I think if Baker Mayfield and OBJ need to get on the same page to take this offense to the next level, and we have not seen them get on the same page, and they've had some connections that were pretty electric. Obviously, the touchdown against the Bengals in week two on primetime television, that was a big connection, and they have some of those, but they need to get on the same page. So if OBJ can't get on that same page and Baker Mayfield can't find him on that, in the scheme of this offense, they're not going to take this to the next level where they need to get to. So I think there's not a real concern for me of like, I don't think Joel Bitonio is going to fall off a cliff or anything like that. There's no indication that Jason Treader is going to, be bad at all, just fall off. I think Wyatt Teller's regression might be something there because he really took a big time leap. But I think his physical presence, he's still going to be a dominant run blocker at the worst. So I think for the Browns here, it's more of what OBJ can provide rather than because the Browns are really expecting big things from him because they obviously didn't really make any big time wide receiver moves this offseason except for drafting Anthony Schwartz, who is a third round pick, and you're expecting him just to be like a piece to stretch the defense. So for me, it's OBJ and Baker Mayfield getting on the same page as the basically the X factor for this offense.
Defense now, where are you on the overhaul? Do you think they did a lot to rectify this thing, or you still think there's shortcomings in certain spots? And then we'll kind of go from there, but I just want your general thought on what they did.
Oh, I mean, they overhauled the secondary, which is huge, right? So John Johnson, Troy Hill, Greg Newsome, all those additions are going to spell really good things for the Cleveland Browns this year. And you're talking about replacing Andrew Sandejo, who had a coverage grade last year of a 43.2, with John Johnson, who's in the upper 80s and one of the highest graded safeties over the past, since he's come into the league, one of the most valuable safeties since coming into the league. So that difference alone is just monstrous. You're talking about adding a win or two for a season, which for a single player being able to swing that much, that's not the quarterback, is huge for an NFL team. And then you're talking about Troy Hill, who was the highest graded slot cornerback over the past 2 years, replacing Kevin Johnson, who graded at a 52.6 last year. Monster improvement there as well. And getting in Greg Newsome, who opposite of, Denzel Ward, you had Terrence Mitchell, who is a fine player. He's not a massive liability, but he created a 65.3 last year, which is, you're talking about a slightly below average type player, and he was your eighth highest graded defensive player last year. So you're talking about monster upgrades in the secondary that are going to be, it's going to allow that pass rush to get there just another quarter of a second will allow Myles Garrett to get a couple more sacks. It'll allow Jadeveon Clowney to get a little bit more pressure to help an interior defensive lineman get some pressure, get some sacks. So it's all going to play together when you improve that secondary as it is. I think everybody has the same concerns. The linebacker position is probably the weak point, but they're going to be in so much dime, it's not really going to matter in my opinion.
Yeah. I'm with you. Let's talk about anybody defensively you might be worried about. Are you okay with Clowney? Do you think he's going to be enough? Do you think they find a role for JOK? I'm kind of just curious if we look back again. This is more prediction based, but if we look back at the end of this thing, at the end of the year, and maybe they weren't as good defensively turnaround wise as we hoped, is there any spot player, anything that stands out to you that you're most maybe nervous about?
I think the most nervous position that would make me anything for the Browns is their interior defensive line and the linebacker core. I mean, really, I think you look at, I'm not worried about Jadeveon Clowney. I know that he has some injury issues and he has that history of not being able to play full seasons, but he's not a guy that you're expecting to go out there and be this dominant pass rusher. He's going to be more of your run defender. I think they have good piece behind him in Tack McKinley, that can spell him and take the load off him when he doesn't, you don't want him out there for a full slate of plays in a game. But you're talking about this defensive interior. Malik Jackson, I think, is going to be a really solid piece for them, but they don't have a true run-stopping, defensive tackle for this team. And while, stopping a run, and we talk about this at PFF all the time, like stopping a run is like the least important facet of the game. Having guys that can stop the run on your defensive line and also get after the pass rusher is obviously valuable. If you can stop the run and force them to pass, but also when you stop, if you're able to stop the run in dime packages and nickel packages, it allows you to keep those defensive backs out there. So, one of the things that, you look at like a Vince Wilfork over the years with the New England Patriots, he was so dominant as a nose tackle that he would eat up multiple gaps and allow the Patriots to play with five defensive backs and not have to force those guys into run situations or into their run gaps immediately. He was able to hold down that defensive line. And the same rings true for teams that have had these dominant nose tackles over the years. Haloti Ngata for the Ravens for a number of years. These guys are able to stop the run and force teams and allow you to have an extra defensive back out there so that you can defend the run and defend the pass when you have such a dominant guy like that. So I think for the Browns, they don't have that. And I think that is their weak point. So when you talk about wanting to stop Lamar Jackson or just have these dime packages, there is a risk. There's a risk that like these guys can't stop the run. But hopefully, from a Browns, perspective, they're racking up the points and forcing the other team into these passing situations so that they can be in these dime situations and not have to worry too much about the run. So that'd be my concern, is that they just don't have true dominant run defenders outside of Jadeveon Clowney, who they brought in. So I think what they want to do is be able to have Anthony Walker out there as their Mike linebacker to stop the run, not have to worry too much about the pass, and just have, really fast dime, deep secondary out there around him so that he's protected in the pass game.
I'll ask you real quick as we close, who stands out to you? You watch all these games, John. You're going to watch every single one. You're going to break them down, probably watch every single one two or three times. You're one of the rare people like me who do that. Is there somebody you're most excited about? I mean, it could be multiple guys that you're really, really, really excited to watch on film this year. And as you watch it, you kind of key in on them. I've got a couple I've talked about on this pod, but I'm curious if you have somebody new or old, maybe taking a step a little older or something that you're most excited about this year.
I think Grant Delpit comes to mind for me because he was going to be such a big part of this defense last year. And obviously when he got hurt, that didn't happen, right? So he tore his Achilles. But I think for me, evaluating him coming out of college, he had a lot of missed tackles, but he was an instinctive, explosive player that could cover the slot, could cover deep, could be in the box, do all these things. But I think with him not being able to get to see that and see how he developed and started off the season, we got to miss that. So it's essentially his rookie year, and he's going to see a lot of snaps, maybe not as many as anticipated, because there's going to be competition for that safety spot. But I think for me, I'm really looking forward to seeing what he can do on the field, because we had him as a first round pick, you know, I think a top 15 prospect in last year's draft, and we know he went into second round. He's a guy that I liked a lot better than, say, like a JOK coming out this year, but they obviously play different positions. So we also had JOK as a first round pick. I think JOK is going to, you know, he's going to see more bench than the field this year. But for me, it's Grant Delpit.
All right. He's John Costco. He's Pro Football Focus's ace up their sleeve, man. He does great charting work. He does fantastic conceptual stuff. He was explaining to me a key indicator of stats they're going to do for coverage off the air. Not telling you it. You'll see it when it comes out. He's great. He's fantastic. John, thanks, man.
Hey, thanks a lot, Jake. Always a pleasure.
All right, and thanks to John Costco for joining us, taking time on a Friday when he's busy. We will have another weekend bonus content edition for you tomorrow. Should be a fun one. And then I will be out a couple days at the start of next week, but I will have two pre-recorded podcasts for Monday and Tuesday for you. We'll see about Wednesday. Not sure about that one yet, but we'll see. A reminder, we're going to be going live on Twitch Monday. Again, I won't be there, but our good guys, Stephen Thomas, Andy Lytle will be kicking this thing off. Barry McBride will be in and out of the show. We'll have all the OBR guys. I'll be back, like I said, Wednesday night to help with the streaming as camp is set to get underway. We are on the cusp of new, fresh content, an exciting season. Can't wait to get there with you guys. And it's been a blast this offseason, but as you know, and I obviously know, it's time to turn the page and talk about something new, which I think will be fun. Reminder again, the Twitch link to sign up and go ahead and follow us so you can know when we're going live is available in the description of this podcast. Keep sharing, keep rating, keep subscribing so you get that fresh content delivered to you for your commute, your gym workout, whatever it is you do with your podcast. They'll be delivered to you, whether Spotify, Apple Podcasts, whatever you use. Really appreciate all the support, guys. Really appreciate it. Have a great Saturday. And as usual, go Browns.